Hello and welcome to another episode of BFRR, our Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock and Roll podcast. My name is Stefan Grassmann. Today, we're taking a closer look at how financial market infrastructure is actually evolving in practice. We've discussed many of these topics from different angles on the podcast, from tokenization to digital money and new rails. But what's often missing is the perspective from within institutions that actually run the systems today. And that's exactly why I'm looking forward to today's conversation with Thilo Derenbach from Deutsche Börse Clearstream. Welcome, Thilo.
Hi, Stefan. Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thilo, you're working as head of sales and BD in digital security services at Clearstream and are in constant exchange with clients and market participants. Before we dive into the bigger topics, let's first calibrate our audience. What exactly is your role today at Clearstream? And how does it connect to the broader transformation happening at Deutsche Börse and Clearstream?
Yeah, sure. Perhaps to baseline the whole conversation. So Deutsche Börse Group is an exchange organization. It runs the German market. It runs the cash market, derivatives markets. It is an integrated exchange organization in the sense that it offers trading, clearing, what we call in the traditional world, settlement, custody, asset servicing, data dissemination products. And in that sense is one of the leading exchanges in the world, depending on the product type in Europe, but certainly globally active. And I represent Clearstream in this podcast and also from an employment perspective. And Clearstream is what we would call the post-trade processing engine of the German stock exchange. So that would be comparable to something like the DTCC in the US, the Euroclears, or other infrastructures in Asia. So we conduct everything that follows trading and clearing, actually. So everything that we would call settlement, custody, asset servicing. And when we talk about assets, just to clarify that point, we talk about securities. So in Europe, that would be what we would typically call a MiFID instrument. That clarified the organization. And in my role then is really to, as you say, conduct business development, commercialize the products that we have. And of course, a large proportion of our revenues are still related to traditional security services, I would say. But we focus more and more, and 99% of my time I focus on digital initiatives. But we'll talk about digitization and other things, of course, in this podcast at length.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you are fully immersed in digital assets. And maybe for the audience, how was your way into this world? So where did you come from and what qualified you? Or how did you get that interesting job at Clearstream? I think many envy you for that role.
Yeah, and Stefan, we know each other for quite some time, and roles seem to evolve a little bit from what we would call traditional TradFi roles into more Web3 oriented or digital roles indeed. And actually, this is probably one of my most exciting roles that I've had. Geographically, the most exciting time, I think, was when I was running the London office a couple of years ago. But content-wise, the aspect of digitization comes very close to the exciting days of the late 90s and early 2000s, when we saw the electronification of stock exchanges. That's the time when I started to work. Ultra exciting times, because we moved from floor trading to electronification, and that brought all of the good things, you know, dark pools, high frequency trading, all of these wonderful things, globally available trading activities. And we see a similar sort of super cycle, if you like, in the financial markets now with digitization. So couldn't be more excited about this role that I've had for a bit more than 3 years. So I'm not a crypto dude. I don't come from that background. I'm actually a TradFi guy, finding his way in the digital space.
With a very good understanding of the space, I guess.
Getting there, yes. Yes. Oh, always, honestly, Stefan, there's always more to learn. I mean, we might talk about, you know, recent news later on, but it's just astonishing the amount of news that you get now in the market on a daily basis. So just a little excursus on that one. We write a weekly digital newsletter. And I must read my own newsletter that my colleagues, of course, produce, because I regularly miss one, two, or three really noteworthy messages in the market because there's just too much going on.
I know exactly what you're talking about because I'm in the same problem space, but I also might have a solution, but more on that after the podcast.
Okay.
But given your role in sales and business development, you're in a quite unique position, I think, because you're constantly exposed to real client demand, not just internal strategic discussions. So where do you currently see the strongest pull from the market? Where are clients actually pushing you for change, for new offerings?
Perhaps one disclaimer beforehand, or no, clarification rather. When I talk about clients, these would be exclusively and entirely institutional players. So the Germans, we as a Clearstream organization, we don't engage with the end investor, not the retail investor, nor any other end investor, unless it is a bank, a financial intermediary, or other professional of the financial market. But that is the community that we service. So my messages will be slightly different to perhaps responses from others that you've already interviewed here in this podcast. But to your question then, where's the biggest pull or push from their perspective? It is generally the aspect of digitization. Everyone in the industry, I'll claim everyone, pretty much everyone at least, has understood that digitization is leading the way forward. It is what will make or keep market participants and market players competitive. It brings numerous advantages, and this is where I insist on the aspect of digitization rather than blockchain technology or tokenization specifically. Digitization delivers speed, efficiency, data consistency, 24/7 capabilities, but also operational effects, irrespectively of the underlying tech. So that everyone has understood, and everyone wants to reap those benefits. So generally, that push is towards Tilo or Clearstream or Deutsche Börse, you who operate and run financial markets, help us transition into that digital age, if you like, deliver the products to us so that we can onward deliver them to our clients. So this classic B2B2C sort of infrastructure, and therefore become more digital so that we can become more digital. I would say I'll leave that there for the moment. We'll certainly dive deeper into those aspects, but that's generally what they're pushing for.
Okay. And if we keep with that push, you just told me you came back from Miami from Consensus Conference, a little bit of a jet lag, I guess. But we all know these discussions on stage. And in my experience, the discussions on stage are always a bit in the future. And there is a bit of a different thing in reality. Could you help us to dissect that difference a bit? So what is actual demand today compared to what is usually discussed on these stages?
Yeah. And I don't want to belittle what is mentioned on those stages, because what the people mention there is not only their belief, but it is what is actually happening around them. The question is, how sizable is that volume, and in comparison, right? I mean, someone like Clearstream, and I'll speak for ourselves, but other infrastructures are similar. We will be, you know, from a volume perspective, we will be rolling a mid-sized European market GDP every other day in terms of volume, right? So when people tell us or tell you, I have 3 billion of this or 5.5 million of that, that's all very nice. But in the grand scheme of things, it's actually a drop in the ocean. Again, not belittling the activity, but sometimes it's not put into context. So that's why I would insist that still a good 99% of the overall financial market activity still is in the traditional world, but it's slowly moving into the new world. But what we see on stage are the dynamics and the sort of pathways to future behavior, future habits, future activities. There's a lot of talk, of course, around tokenization of real-world assets, RWA, or what I would call real-world securities, which is important. There's a lot of talk of mobility and reuse of assets. Vaults are a hot topic, of course, everywhere at the moment. Tokenization in general is. Digital cash solutions of any form and color are top of the list. But the reality is, if we look at least at the financial market intermediaries, so the banks and other professionals in that segment, the vast majority will have only started the digital journey. And some are very at the forefront of it, but the wider audience of the market is not so far advanced yet. But they are all willing and, of course, able to transition into that digital space, but will need some time. It takes not only time, it takes money, it takes resources and know-how to actually transition. And this is where we all have to work together. So the vast volume, and I'll use one number only. So out of the roughly 22 trillion of assets that we hold, and DTCC announced, and we might talk about this later again, announced that they're looking to tokenize more than $100 trillion worth of securities. That's a very big number compared to possibly 1 to 3 billion of assets that are already tokenized. So the dynamics are there. The volume, the scale is still very unbalanced, I would say.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that better understanding. But before we go into these use cases and this latest news from DTCC and others, let's first stay a bit on Deutsche Börse Group.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when you Google Deutsche Börse Group, there's a lot of acronyms that come up. So there's Deutsche Börse itself, Clearstream, 360X, 360T. You have D7. You have financed into startups like Crypto Finance. Could you give us an overview on how these different entities play together and which services they offer to whom? I think that helps a lot in our discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll try to dissect that, and I'm not going to go down the marketing route, so I'll keep it high level and really just focused on some of the elements. No, but I'll start with a very generic sentence that is very important to understand, and then when we talk about different entities and how they work together, I think it will become clearer. So our, if you want, mantra is to digitize financial markets as an exchange organization. We run markets. We work for the entire market. We cannot afford, I would say, or we don't push individual use cases specifically for a certain client or user type. Whatever we deploy needs to be available and applicable to the general financial market at large, period. That's an important message. We roll into this digital space and transition into that digital financial market environment along three key driving principles. One is that we have digitization at the core of our mindset, so like a digital first sort of mindset, but we need to maintain a hybrid infrastructure because of what I've said earlier, because the market at large is not yet transitioning or has not transitioned yet, and it will take a couple of years until they do. So you need a hybrid infrastructure that allows market participants to remain in the traditional world but start reaping benefits of digitization, but equally servicing native on-chain players who want to access liquidity, collateral, instruments from the traditional world. So this digital-first hybrid infrastructure, I think, is important. The second element is expansion of asset classes. And I'll come back to that in a second when I talk about the legal entities that you mentioned. But the security space that we cover is important, MiFID instruments. MiCA instruments, stablecoins, cryptocurrencies, and e-money tokens in the wider sense are becoming more popular also in the institutional space. So we need to expand in that sense. The third element here from an expansion asset class expansion perspective is that we talk about securities as financial instruments, but there's so many other non-securities financial instruments in the market. Credit notes, export letters of credit, bank guarantees, syn loans, promissory notes, all these sorts of things that form part of the financial services industry, keep financial markets going, and still are not digital, many of them. So that's a wider picture. So expansion of asset classes is very large and important for us. And the third element of that strategy is partnerships. So we acknowledge that, of course, we can't do everything ourselves. Partnerships with modern on-chain Web3 players is important, and we announced Kraken and Ondo and a few other relationships and partnerships to learn, to expand jointly, because we are clear in our understanding that, again, financial markets will be digital and there is a new environment and ecosystem developing, and we need to be part of that. We cannot stay in our traditional world. So having said that and having set that scene, if we talk about the different entities, you will have trading venues that are very traditional, so cash markets like Xetra or Frankfurt's floor trading, FWB trading, the Eurex trading entities for derivatives, the clearing organization, and Clearstream from a more traditional vertical sort of value proposition. The names that are more interesting going forward and are playing part more in the Web3 environment would be the likes of 360X, three, DX, crypto finance, and D7. Fund CLT as well, but I'll stay with those main elements. So on the trading side, I talked about this hybrid environment. We need trading venues in the traditional world, and we're developing and building out trading venues that service tokenized securities, MiCA instruments, and other on-chain assets. And that's what 360X or 3DX would be doing. Next to that, we have crypto finance. We acquired crypto finance entirely a couple of years ago now. Crypto finance is a Swiss organization, FINMA regulated, but also with a MiCA license, of course, with a German entity that we work with. And crypto finance focuses entirely on the trading, the safekeeping, the administration, so asset servicing, if you like, and of course staking of cryptocurrencies and other MiCA instruments, so also stablecoins. So another very important complement for us. And then you have D7, which is the post-trade digital infrastructure for the issuance and the lifecycle management and custody of real-world assets, so securities in the traditional sense, but also tokenized and natively issued securities. So you can picture us as, again, thinking of that hybrid model, the traditional infrastructure of the exchange, the digital infrastructure of the exchange that we're building up, and where we're now taking these puzzle pieces and connecting them front to back, if you want, from a securities processing perspective, and between the ecosystem. You're starting for a vertical integration of the value proposition along the technical rails and an interoperability between the infrastructures because of the need to offer hybrid infrastructure to traditional players as well as the native players. I'll leave that there. I hope that describes it a little bit. Yeah.
Maybe one follow-up question on that, because there's always an intense discussion with TradFi players where blockchain actually fits into their old world.
Yeah.
And many of them answer with post-trade. Yeah. So if you look at NASDAQ, NYSE, and DTCC, you get a feeling, okay, they want to keep the trading venue as is. They say, this is optimized for speed. Let's try to keep it there at least for the time being. And bring in blockchain for the post-trade settlement, stuff like that, which for me looks a bit conservative, I would say. When I listen to you and your setup of the different entities, sounds a bit like a different approach, that you also look into this trading venue part a bit at least. So what's your position against these American players? Do you go the same route, or is it subtly different?
You bring in the geographic element as well. I'll start irrespectively of that one, just generalizing or generally putting this into context. So looking at it from a post-trade perspective, of course, makes sense because post-trade infrastructure is a complex beast. Trading is, sorry, my colleagues will probably not like this when I say this, but it's relatively simple compared to trying to make a security move across the globe in different jurisdictions for settlement and custody purposes. That's where the complexity comes in. That's where all the lifecycle events come in, the predictable, but also the unpredictable corporate events. And that is what brings complexity. And therefore, the processing effort, the operational risk is high. So bringing in, and this is where I would insist on digital technology, helps for sure, right? And so it is definitely a right place to start. Is it the only place to apply digitization or digital technologies, namely blockchain technology? No, it is not. We think that not only are we moving into the digital space, we also believe that blockchain technology is that technology that will be used going forward, and it will be used along and across the value chain of a security and other asset classes. We firmly have this belief, and while we might have started in the post-trade space, and it looks like it's a post-trade space, but I mentioned that in Clearstream, we start issuing the securities and process them. So the life of a security actually starts in the post-trade entity because it gets issued there. So that's why it might look very, you know, looking at the end of the process, while actually in these infrastructures, generally, the security gets created to start with. And here we've seen that, and other infrastructures have as well, that digitization at unit level, so with every transaction, with every security that gets issued, you see the benefits of digitization, i.e., speed of issuance, the efficiency of the process, the operational effects that it has. I can give you an example on that one in a second. And also ensuring data consistency and just mobility of an asset, which is easily kickstarted, if you like, if you originate the security as a smart digital object. And I think that's the important aspect. What we need to ensure at our end, and this will apply to others as well, if we want to offer, say, 24/7 always on services, which we cannot today in the traditional world, we will need entirely digital rails end to end for the whole life cycle of a security, for example. And if we don't provide that, our clients won't be able to provide it to their clients either. So if we stick and were to stay stuck in a whatever 14-5 sort of scenario where we typically are today, because there's no settlement or custody activity over the weekend, then we're never going to reach that. And that's where we will fall behind competitors that are in the market that can or are moving towards a 24/7 sort of service. And I would just on this blockchain aspect, one other or last comment. We like to compare it to, in this case, to the car industry, not only because of the hybrid engine, a very efficient combustion engine with an electric engine on the side that can grow over time, but actually we believe that like in the car industry, and you know this, Stefan, right? No one's questioning any longer whether a hydrogen engine would be much better, or engine, hydrogen to produce energy for a car would be much better than electricity. It might, but it's not even a question any longer, right? That decision has been made, regulations being built around it. Certain regions in the world are dominating that product, an electric vehicle, and are pushing that into the industry. So we can all assume that's moving forward. Blockchain technology is quite similar in that sense, right? Digital technologies will deliver value, but like hydrogen versus electricity, the decision has been made that blockchain technology is the one that's going to move forward in the financial services industry. And regulation is starting to be built and written around blockchain technology. And then you have DTCC, Euroclear, US, SGX, Hong Kong Stock Exchange, many, many ASX, SDX, or the Swiss Exchange, many infrastructures starting to deploy blockchain technology as well as market participants. So this is where we're going. And it's the ship has sailed, basically, is what I'm saying regarding the technology. And therefore, we need to push that forward.
Maybe one critical question to sum this section of our conversation up. I think many, many Web3 proponents, they talk a lot, including myself, a lot about unbundling and rebundling and creating more competition on a more open platform in the end. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we see all these behemoth players in US and Europe and everywhere actually moving. And you are the best example that you innovate on all levels to embrace this new technology. Do you think this will be a bit a more open future that we're heading to? Or I think you need to try to stay in the same rather monopolistic stage as you are. I think that's the commercial goal of a company like yours. But how do you see that? Will there be unbundling and rebundling, which is somewhat unavoidable through that technology? Or do you think you can stay the one-stop shop for your clients and they are willing to pay the fee for that?
So, no, it's a good question, and many that will be listening to this podcast will probably not agree with me. But I think the reality is, and they might have to wake up to that reality, is that, of course, I'm generalizing, this is 101 sort of textbook stuff, with an industrial revolution, cards are being, you know, mished, whatever the English word is, mixed. Yeah, thank you. Are mixed again anew. And of course, incumbents, while they have a right to win, they have to earn the right to win, right? Because they have to stay competitive. They have to be on their toes and have to, you know, embrace the new technology, bring things forward and deliver value in the end to the clients. Otherwise, they do not have a right to win, right? And this is where any market participant, any incumbent player would be left behind. So if we were to sit on our hands, obviously no one would give us the, you know, the right to win. But we are moving forward. We are pushing that agenda, digitizing the financial markets forward. And we have for the last few years, we're putting millions of euros or dollars against that message, right? We're committing a lot of money to deploy digital technologies for our own purposes to become better, but also to enable our clients in the B2B2C space. all of the incumbent players going to survive? I do not know. Possibly not. Those who don't move certainly would not have or would find it difficult to remain relevant in the space. Will we in the future, and this is probably where many people will hopefully agree, will we call ourselves, us as in the post-trade space, a CSD, a central security depository? Possibly not. But it's going to be something else where we as a neutral, highly regulated, robust, very scalable infrastructure will play a role of, call it orchestration of markets, which is perfectly fine, right? But we will have to show and evidence our value contribution to the market and to the clients. Otherwise, of course, we have no right to claim or insist that we remain relevant for the next decade. And there's a lot of innovation coming in. So again, perhaps looking back, and I talked about the electronification of stock exchanges, not many floor stockbrokers still exist, and certainly not as floor stockbrokers in the traditional sense of the 90s or early 2000s. Some have evolved into real market makers, you know, providing lots of liquidity, offering high-frequency trading capabilities across trading venues across the globe. But the classic floor trader that we all remember from back then, they don't exist any longer. And it's okay, because they would not be able to compete in this electronic high-frequency environment. So here again, if we were not to digitize, so I don't want to dwell on this too long, if we were not to push forward the digitization in our own engine, we would find it difficult to be able to compete. Why? And perhaps allow me that last sentence. We clearly see in the retail space, on-chain, a lot of developments that we think and we already see seeping into the institutional space. So a type of retailization of the industry where things like fractionalization, instant transactions, immediate confirmation of whatever transaction it is, the always on 24/7 sort of character of the environment, things that a retail investor basically assumes as normal nowadays will become, we think, will become the norm also in the institutional space. And if that is the case, then things need to change in the infrastructures, and certainly the incumbents will need to change more, because we have legacy infrastructure. We have mainframe infrastructure still here and there. Even if everything or pretty much everything is in the cloud, doesn't make a difference. You still process 14.5 if your engine doesn't work differently. And here you have some competitors from the Web3 world that are, of course, they have no legacy to carry around. They start off from a not an easier base, but a more advanced base. So we have to keep up. Very different one, yeah.
Before we jump back into today's episode, a quick word about an event close to our hearts, the Point Zero Forum, an annual gathering of over 2,000 policymakers, central bankers, regulators, and industry leaders at the intersection of finance, technology, and policy. BFRR is proud media partner of the Point Zero Forum, and we'll be reporting live on site with the full co-host team. Organized by the Global Finance and Technology Network and the Swiss State Secretariat of Finance, the Point Zero Forum takes place in Zurich from 23rd to 25th June 2026. This year's lineup includes Swiss Federal Councillor Karin Keller-Sutter, Teva CEO Paolo Arduino, former crypto head of policy at Andreessen Horowitz, Brian Quintens, and NVIDIA's EMEA financial technology lead, Dr. Jochen Papenbrock. The agenda covers everything from AI in financial services and digital assets of stablecoins, tokenization, and the new regulatory frontier where the rules of finance are being rewritten. Come meet us in Zurich. Register at pointzeroforum.com, and as a BFRR listener, you get 30% off the full price industry pass with code BFRR2026. I repeat, BFRR2026.
But I really like that because, and you also mentioned these three pillars that you're focusing on. And the third was these partnerships. And that's also what I recommend to all our clients that, hey, come on, you won't reinvent the wheel. There are some blockchain native companies that have 7, 8, sometimes 10 years of advantage in how an on-chain vault, for example, works. Yeah, I think Centrifuge is in its 8th year and 4th version or 3rd. Players like these are quite interesting and versatile. And I think mixed together with the requirements from the TradFi side can actually create quite a unique combination, a successful one from my perspective. So
yeah,
congrats to that idea to look out for partnerships.
No, absolutely. I mean, the agility is just staggering. I mean, I won't name the company and I will generalize this again, but our release cycles, we have monthly smaller releases, but we had 3 very large releases still in the traditional world a year, a March, a June, and a November release, broadly speaking, and then smaller ones in between, right? When I talk to an on-chain trading venue and I tell them my next release is 3 months down the road, they look at you and they're like, 3 months is a lifetime for us because the competition amongst them in Web3 is so aggressive. The competition is so high. They cannot afford to wait 3 months to evolve and bring a new key feature and bring new products and services to market. We could in the past, but now we need to adapt to that as well. But it is still quite a discrepancy between their capabilities in terms of speed and delivery compared to ours when it comes to larger releases. That must be acknowledged, and we must acknowledge that. That's fair. It's, I think, a very, very realistic and sober view, but we have to work on that, right? Because we otherwise, in a few years' time, if we keep up that pace and they move at their pace, they will be in a very different place 12 months from here.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But this talk about partnerships leads us to the next section where we want to talk about industry shifts and convergence. And you just announced an investment into Kraken, about $200 million. Could you take us a bit on that journey as far as you're allowed to tell us? What's the reasoning behind that? How does that, for me personally, I thought, okay, you tokenize a lot of securities now via D7 and gradually more on blockchain. Is that somewhat related to engaging with Kraken as an interesting trading venue there? Or what part of Kraken, which is already also quite a beast, was the most interesting part that brought you into that investment, actually?
Yeah, I am and work in the post-trade space, so I can talk about these sort of aspects, but it's, of course, a larger consideration from a group perspective. And it goes back to what I actually said earlier, right? If we truly believe in our digital transformation and the digital strategy of digitizing financial markets, as I said, we need to move that strategy forward quickly. And to your point, just 30, 40 seconds ago, when you said, actually, you cannot build all of this yourself. Do not assume that you can do all of this yourself in a short period of time. You need partners and people who are perhaps more advanced or more focused on certain aspects of that. So therefore, we've entered into a number of partnerships, including a partnership with Kraken, which we announced towards the end of last year, I think it was 2025. It's basically a natural consequent development or deepening of that relationship. So the partnerships themselves already help us to advance our understanding, our knowledge, accelerate our work, integrate solutions from those partners and vice versa. It's really a two-way street with the partners that we've announced. So be it the stablecoin issuers, the Krakens, the Ondos, but also some of the others that we've already announced. But to your question, the investment is really to accelerate that digital asset strategy. It's not an aim, because we've already talked about the hybrid model, but it enhances that confirmation, or it underlines the confirmation that we want to run digital first, but hybrid infrastructures, because we have our traditional world and someone, an investment in, and a very, very strong partner, therefore, in the Web3 space. And for us, if we think about financial markets of the future, be it Kraken, but these Web3 players will be a large part of that. Not necessarily dominant players, but they will play a very relevant role in that future environment. And hence, we want to be close to those in that environment, have a foot in the door in the future financial market, and then be able to continue to service our clients in the traditional world for those who want to stay there and remain there for longer, but also then moving forward and opening the door much further for Deutsche Börse Group to provide digital services, product and services to its client. And when I talk clients, again, these are institutional clients, banks, but also larger fintechs, and offer settlement, custody, security services for, or asset services for securities, and also other asset types.
You also mentioned Ondo. What's the reasoning behind that partnership?
Ondo is like Kraken, but many other on-chain, say, trading venues or distribution venues, are large players with investor bases that are very intensively and extensively looking to invest into securities and other asset types on-chain, right? They live entirely on the blockchain. They have wallets. They have investment opportunities. They have capital to invest and are looking for an ever broader asset scope in which they can invest into. And of course, securities represent a very large and relevant sort of investment vehicle, if I could call it that. But these securities are classically not yet on chain. They sit in the traditional world. I talked about the 22 trillion with us, 100 plus trillion with Euroclear, with DTCC. Euroclear will have something in the 40s or 50s as well. So you have roughly 180 trillion, 200 trillion of assets, security assets, sitting still in the traditional world that are not yet accessible to on-chain players. What they do have access to are wrappers or derivatives of those securities on chain, but it's not quite the same thing. I'm not going to go into the details of that, but asset servicing a security and having a derivative of that on chain that you can invest into is not entirely the same thing. But we'll leave that to a side for the moment. The key point is that a very large and very liquid, very mobile and very, I would say, collateral rich asset type is not yet on the blockchain. So to your question, why Ondo? We would look to work with the likes of Ondo, but also Kraken and many others in the Web3 industry to tokenize the securities that we have. So the Siemens, the Deutsche Banks, the BASF, the ThyssenKrupps, all of those blue chip securities, equities, bonds, funds, ETFs, money market funds, but also certificates and warrants, for example, tokenize them and make them available as the real thing, if you like, on chain, and distribute them. And this goes back to the partnership, distribute these securities via the network that, for example, Ondo or also Kraken would have, but many others also. That's the one way. The other way is, of course, to say, of course, we have to acknowledge that securities also equities, perhaps in the future, increasingly might be natively issued on the blockchain, and possibly not with us, but on other venues. Still, our clients, the ones in the traditional world, would love to have access to those securities because it's still a good security, collateral value is there, and it's something that they, in turn, don't have access to if they don't have a wallet, if they are not playing on chain. So we call it detokenizing it, or eisenizing, if that's a good word. It's a bit clunky. So let's say detokenizing. So we look to detokenize those securities and bring them into the traditional world. And that goes back to this hybrid interoperable environment, to bring natively issued securities into the traditional world, taking traditional securities and tokenizing them and bringing them onto the blockchain, so that the players who have a technological preference have access to the same or at least a similar pool of securities that they can invest into. And Ondo is one of those partners, of course, that we want to start with this with and build this out in a bidirectional manner.
So it's a two-way street, obviously.
It's absolutely a two-way
very,
street.
Very interesting. And it's all about distribution channels, giving investors access to the assets they like in the form they like, maybe more digital, maybe more traditional ways of interacting with these asset classes.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And perhaps one last analogy, well, I'm not sure if that's the last one, but another analogy compared to the car industry, if we think of aviation, perhaps, and this might illustrate a little bit the partners here or the reasons for partnerships. We as an infrastructure, we are in the terminal building, runway sort of industry, right? We run an airport, right? We are not an airline. We don't decide whether a flight to Cannes should be expanded or one to Miami, where I just came from, is more appropriate and attract more clients in the future. We create the infrastructure. We make sure that you can fly to Cannes, you can fly to Miami, you can fly to Buenos Aires, whatever you prefer. But those parties that we've just mentioned are the ones that are providing the flight traffic, the connecting destinations. So they're producing products and services on the rails that we provide. And those rails need to be traditional, but then you also need to be blockchain rails. So you have runways for either type of plane, if you like, right? But the planes and the destinations, all of that is done by others. We don't claim to be in that business. We are in the infrastructure, long-term infrastructure game. Costs a lot of money. It takes a little bit longer than perhaps developing a specific use case or a product and service. But the infrastructure is important and our infrastructure needs to be hybrid.
Cool, cool. Which leads us to DTCC, because I think you just mentioned the two-way street of Deutsche Börse. I think DTCC just announced quite a similar move, a significant move, because with their new tokenization initiative, together with more than 50 major financial institutions, they just a few months after the SEC granted them a no-action letter, they now move forward. And in an extreme speed, from my perspective. I don't know how you see these announcements, but for me, it seems rather quick that they want to go live with something in a pilot phase in July and broader in October. And they also say, okay, we bring in all the traditional securities, we can tokenize them on our platform, and you can redeem them back from the chain to the traditional format later on. So I see a lot of similarities of what DTCC seems to announce and seems to perform in the US, like your strategy. Or do you see it similarly, or is it where is the difference?
No, I wouldn't really entirely agree. So the direction of travel is very, very clear. DTCC is, in your case, because you refer to them, other infrastructures as well. But to your point here, DTCC has clearly understood also that they need to branch into and develop themselves into a digital infrastructure and be able to offer digital products and services, or at least offer the rails that I've mentioned earlier. So tokenizing the more than 100 trillion of assets that they have is a big step forward to bringing liquidity of securities onto the blockchain, which will, I personally think, really spark the adoption quite significantly. So adoption of blockchain technology and the use of securities on chain. The strategy is, to your point, very, very similar. Ours is only in the sense that different, that it extends beyond the post-trade element that DTCC represents, right? We need to integrate the solutions from trading, clearing, settlement, and custody into one, because otherwise, the weakest link will always be the one that not dominates, but basically defines how good and how adopted or how much your product gets adopted. So that would be the difference. Otherwise, it is very, very similar. They have slightly larger volumes. We're talking about 100 trillion. We have 22 trillion, but they have US equities. We have European equities, namely German, but also other European blue chip equities that we would have in our portfolio that we can tokenize. So from that perspective, to conclude or summarize, direction of travel very, very clear, direction of travel very, very similar, moving at similar speeds, but very clearly also understanding, and I need to emphasize that point, being also very cautious how we build this out, because we built infrastructure for decades and it has to be super solid, super reliable, super scalable, super trustworthy, right? So that the market will continue to trust and rely on us for servicing securities, of course, either here or there, so traditional or tokenized.
One other news from this week was the news from Bullish taking over Equiniti. And actually, you pointed me out to that one. So for the listeners, Bullish acquired Equiniti for $4.2 billion beginning of the week. And Thilo, take us through that. What does that actually mean? Because Bullish is more on the new side or the crypto side of things. They now buy into Equiniti, which is a global transfer agent. So they service around 3,000 public companies as issuers. They have 15,000 corporate clients, more than 20 million shareholders are serviced by them. They process 500 billion in annual payments, which is a small number compared to the 100 trillion we just talked about, but still sizable, obviously. What does that tell us, that the new players are now acquiring the more traditional ones?
Yeah. And Stefan, I think that is the point, right? So I won't specifically comment on bullish and Equiniti because it's not my place to, I can interpret, but it's not my place to really comment on the investment strategy of 4.2 billion euros or dollars worth into a traditional player. But I think the point that you make is the pertinent one, in the sense that from a size perspective, at least as far as I'm aware, it's the first time, I'll say that, one of the first times at least, where a Web3 player invests that amount of money. Now, money has always been invested, but these sizable amounts of money, $4-5 billion worth of investments into a traditional financial market industry player. So that's, I think, the most, for me, was the most remarkable sort of message, that we see ever more Web3 players looking to acquire, and also, as I called it, having a foot in the door of the traditional world. So as we look to partner and invest into Web3 players because of the relationship that we're looking to establish and the know-how that we're looking to gain, you have the other direction happening as well, because these Web3 players are fantastic organizations. They're super modern, super agile, have fantastic creative new ideas, but the legacy players sit on the volumes, right? We sit on the assets. Someone like Equiniti sits on volumes of transfer agent information, so corporate event information for, you said 3,000, yeah? 3,000 sort of issuers. That's a very, very large number. And I think many of those 3,000 are Russell 1000 components, S&P 500 components. So you're basically, with this move, bullish in this case, but the Web3 player is basically starting to consume and incorporate the volumes that exist in the traditional world. And I would assume over time we'll look to bring them on chain, right? As we're looking to bring our services on chain, they're looking to drag them on chain through these, through this investment. So two aspects, again, to summarize. One is Web3 is putting a lot of money to access traditional financial market activity and volumes, to learn from those, to consume and integrate them into the proposition and modernize them. So, i.e. digitize or make, bring them on chain. And so that's the main aspect. And the second one that is, I think, generally valid is there's an acknowledgement that the Web3 players, just through sheer existence, I'm overgeneralizing, but through sheer existence, will not eat my breakfast, nor my lunch, nor my dinner if I move forward. But they realize that working with the traditional players actually is the possibly dominant strategy and more helpful strategy because of the volumes that we can contribute and bring to the client base that they have on chain.
I think we say that for years, but it's the convergence,
it's
between
happening.
DeFi and TradFi, if
yeah,
you want.
Yeah, it is so really happening now. This is best evidence. $4.2 billion should be evidence enough, yes.
It's funny because 2 years ago I did this this market study about how DeFi and TradFi might converge. And some of my interview partners, they thought I'm completely crazy to actually think about that. And now we talk about it as if this was completely clear.
Yeah.
Actually, two and a half years ago, it was not clear. Many of the traditional players still had some doubts. Maybe not you guys, because you already moved at that time. But time is telling a different story by now, and it's interesting.
It is. And I mean, 15 years ago, DLT was set to indeed just eat financial market players again for breakfast. It hasn't happened yet. And I think that blockchain technology is a good technology and is here to stay. The institutional traditional players have caught up, and partnerships are needed both ways. And that acknowledgement certainly is taking place. And the evidence is clearly there that the adoption is there. Everything up to 2025 was really, very tough, zäh, as we would say in German, right? Marathon years, but this year is a sprint year. A lot of make and break decisions will be made this year, and infrastructures will be built for the future. Resulting, the foundations will be built this year, I think.
Time is running, but there's one topic I don't want to miss, and you propose to talk about collateral mobility, because that's one of the promises of that whole tokenization thing, that you can move tokens more fast than in the past, and collateral is extremely important, especially in the institutional play. When we talk to investment bankers, it's all about repos, how to make them better, how to reuse your capital in new forms with these new possibilities of, for example, blockchain technology. What's your view on this? So what's the client demand? Can you take us through one or two use cases that clients want to realize in that realm?
So I'll start again in the traditional world for those who are not so familiar with it, that traditional world. In aggregate, in the industry, there will be well north of €1 trillion, dollars worth of collateral value that is being used every day to cover exposures, trading exposures, clearing exposures, bilateral exposures in the financial industry. And €1 trillion is probably not going to do it. But that's the sort of size that we're talking about of not only securities in general, but the collateral value of those assets that are actually being applied. They sit in the traditional world, and that's fine because that's currently where the exposures reside as well. Now, increasingly you see on-chain trading venues, distribution venues, prime brokerage services popping up, very legitimate ones, starting to attract more and more investors, and these investors trading more and more and creating more and more exposures. Now, on-chain, because of the lack of securities in that environment, will be using cash, crypto, or stable coins. More or less, that those would be the categories, use those sorts of assets to cover the exposures that they're creating on-chain. That's nice. And for the volumes that currently are being, the volumes that are traded, and so the exposures that are being created, that's okay, right? But cash is quite an expensive piece of collateral, for example. Crypto is a relatively volatile one, and stable coins are perhaps not yet as available as one would want or need. So what we increasingly see is that not only exposure venues on chain, but investors on those exposure venues, so again, exchanges and other distribution venues on chain, are looking to access their traditional collateral pools to cover those exposures, to deliver that collateral to that exposure venue so that they can trade more because they want to do more. And this, I think, is an important step forward. So at first, we as an industry said, tokenization, great. Once we can tokenize, all of the infrastructures will go away. Intermediaries will only be necessary. All of that, not correct. As we know, the evidence is clear. Then we carried on and said, but it's because we can't do DVP on chain that the adoption is not there. Well, now we have stable coins, we have cryptocurrencies, we have a wholesale CBDC in Europe coming up in September, October this year. So that will be solved as well. And still the adoption won't be as quick and as voluminous as we expect. I believe, and this is something that we've said probably a year or two ago already, we referred to the dead wood. Yeah? People invest into a tokenized security or tokenized asset. They hold it till maturity or redemption, but can't actually mobilize it. So you invest into something, it's a bit of a dead wood because you can't do anything with it. That is changing once you have collateral management services that cover exposures on chain. And of course, once you have more tokenized assets on that blockchain. But the important piece that we want to help with is to say, dear exposure location, we will look to bring more and more securities onto the blockchain by tokenizing them. That's going to take a little bit of time. Until then, why don't you, and this again, this two-way street, why don't you come into the traditional world, open an account with us? Your client is our client. We'll allow that client to post collateral, pledge collateral to you in the traditional world that you will reflect on your venue. And then this client, this common client, will be able to use that. So that's the big piece that we're working on. And honestly, when you talk institutional players, that's what excites them most, because most institutional players are not buy and hold clients. They will look to reuse the asset, mobilize the asset, and you can only do that if you have a reuse possibility, and collateral management will be one of those key enablers, I think.
I think that's very similar to some of the new exchanges that talk about off-exchange collateral, so that you actually have also a security feature, that you, even if the exchange has a security breach, that your collateral is not endangered because it's somewhat guaranteed it sits in a dedicated vault or in your old deposit?
I know you said time is running, but generally, there's so many fashionable words that are being used on chain. In the end, we're always talking about the same stuff, at least when we're amongst professionals of the financial markets, right? Call it lending, call it staking, call it a vault, call it a collateral basket. You know, all of these fancy words are just the same thing, just in a modern sort of labeling. Yeah,
but that's the reason why this podcast exists. We need to translate it sometimes.
Yes. That's rock and roll. I think rock and roll everyone understands.
Exactly. So Tilo, it's been a nice ride. Let's go to the closing. Maybe for you, Deutsche Börse, Clearstream, looking some years ahead, 2 or 3 years. So what's on the plate? What are the most exciting moves that you're going to look into going forward?
So the things that we need to get done and that we need to get right is digitization of our own infrastructure for all of the uses and purposes that I've described earlier, and integrating them along the value chain, right? Because if we're not 24/7, if we don't offer fractionalization, if we don't offer instant processing and settlement, assuming that is going to be the norm, then we're just not state of the art. So that needs to happen, and it needs to be integrated along the value chain, because we offer trading, clearing, settlement, and custody in the solution. So that's an important step forward. That's what we need to work on. And as a tarmac at an airport isn't built in 2 days, it needs to be built quickly, but it's going to take a little bit of time. So when you ask me about a year, 2 or 3 in the future, that's where we're going to put most of our effort: accessing the assets, tokenizing the assets, digitizing the infrastructure, and integrating that solution along the value chain of an exchange organization. Will we have completed that in 3 years' time? No. Even our traditional infrastructure continues to consume millions of euros of build every year, because there's always something new coming up. But assume that we will continue to focus on securities, expand the asset scope along that value chain, and continue to offer a hybrid environment for the next decade or so, I would think. That's at least as long as we think we're going to have to maintain that, until we can start shutting down legacy infrastructure and manage on-chain infrastructure only. Yeah, so everything else, we'll need to see the news. Watch the space, I would say. There's news coming, but those are the big ticket items that we need to focus on.
Thank you, Tilo. I think that was a quite comprehensive overview of everything that's on your mind and on Deutsche Börse's mind, I guess. So thanks for your openness. Any question I didn't ask that you were expecting? Did we leave any open space?
No, I think we covered those things. I hope it came across that the world has to be hybrid. It has to be bi-directional across the ecosystems. Blockchain technology is here to stay, but generally digitization is delivering the benefits that it promised, and we need to reap them for ourselves as organizations, all of us, but also for the clients that we have. And honestly, Stefan, if we look back in probably 12 to 18 months' time, and we see the volume and velocity of assets that are moving on chain, and we haven't even touched, and let's not, because otherwise we need another half hour on AI agents that invest on your behalf or my behalf and just talk to each other while we chat about something else, that's going to be an exciting future. So I think when looking back, last comment, looking back at electronification, the volume increase that we saw in trading in securities was astonishing. And I think we will see yet again such a similar cycle, with factors of X of volumes exploding because of longer trading activities, so 24/7, fractionalization, access to different asset types, and probably AI agents that support all of that. So that's something for another podcast, and you might want to ask someone else that's more prevailed in the topic of AI agents than me.
It's a regular topic we also cover, but very nice ending. Thank you, Tilo, for your time. I know it was very hard to find that spot in your schedule, but we made it. We made it.
Now I can have my, not my nap, no, so I have to go back to work, but I'd love to have a little nap right now because I do feel the jet lag a little bit. Thanks for your time. Thanks for having you, Stefan, and look forward to speaking again sometime soon.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Cheers.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.